Welcome to Being Skeptical, where we dive past the headlines and straight into the messy details, where we only accept claims supported by robust evidence, where anecdotes are challenged and pseudoscience dismantled. I'm your host, Mark, and I'm joined by my co-host, Jody, as we work hard towards promoting science and reason. In today's episode, we discuss everything flu, vaccines, the virus, and stupid people who think they shouldn't be vaccinated.
Yeah. And they are stupid. That's the takeaway from the show.
Yeah.
But before we get into that, we are going to talk about the recent event in Florida for a bit.
Yeah.
There's some interesting things related to that that we should talk about. It was tragic. It's very sad that America has this problem that almost no other affluent Western country has, in part because they allow guns that are used for military to be sold to 18-year-olds, and that is terrifying all in itself. But there was some other sort of like conspiracy stuff that I wanted to touch on. This happens every time there's a school shooting or any type of shooting in general. Usually you have your InfoWars and Mike Cernovich people start going around making claims that aren't true, right? So one of the big ones that surfaced initially was that the shooter was a member of Antifa. This is a commonplace now for far-right conspiracy theorists to sort of blame everything on the far left, right?
Of course.
And of course, there's not a single bit of evidence that that's true. The other one was that the student was a DACA recipient. So DACA is the Deferred Action for Citizenship. Basically, it's a program that was an executive order by Barack Obama that was put in place to allow children who were not born in America but brought to America illegally when they were really young. And it gives them a basic sort of legal status, even though they're not officially citizens, to at least be able to work and not live in fear of deportation. This has been canceled due to legal reasons by the Trump administration, and they're currently trying to fix the thing. I don't know if that's going to happen, partly because Trump, even though he panders to these people saying, yeah, we should do something about DACA, he clearly doesn't really want to do anything about DACA. But so right now, the far right really wants to paint DACA people in a bad light. So because the student's name, last name is Cruz, a lot of people started spreading rumors that he was a DACA recipient because Hispanic sounding name is basically the reason for that connection.
Yeah. I saw a picture of him. He didn't. I mean, maybe it was just a bad photo. He didn't look Hispanic to me.
Well,
but I only saw one picture.
I believe, I think he was adopted, if I'm not mistaken, from what I could find. And so I don't know what the nationality of his birth parents are. But, I mean, that really doesn't matter at that point, right?
No, I just thought we should point out that, you know, the pictures going around don't make him look particularly Hispanic, so...
Yeah, I mean, he could have mixed race parents, right? So maybe...
That's true. I mean, either way, it's a weak-ass argument, and it's just made weaker because of that.
Yeah, so... No, there was no evidence that that was true. And in fact, it's coming out now. So there's two things. Initially, it was reported, and this is an interesting thing, but it was reported that he had connections to a white nationalist group called the Republic of Florida. The guy's name is Jared Jareb, and he was arguing that Cruz came and trained with them. And so he was a member of their white nationalist group. But after this was reported that this Jared Jareb had taken, I guess, had signified that Cruz had trained with them, He then started to backtrack and say that, oh, he was confused, that it was a different guy named Nicholas Cruz. It wasn't the Nicholas Cruz that shot up the school. And so it's not clear to what extent, or if at all, Nicholas Cruz had trained with this white nationalist group. But the interesting thing is that a lot of people who are the conspiracy people are now trying to say, ah, this is the fake news of the mainstream media. But it's interesting how the mainstream media actually reported this, because they reported it quite accurately. All the reports that came out of the mainstream news basically stated that this guy named Jared Jareb has claimed that Nicholas Cruz trained with their white nationalist group. That is all the mainstream media said. And then when it came out that this wasn't true, or at least the guy was backtracking, the mainstream media reported that, oh, now the guy is backtracking. So that doesn't make it fake news. I mean, it would be fake news if the media was just, this guy is a white supremacist, right? Which is way ahead of what the evidence shows, and so that would have been fake news. But I felt that the mainstream coverage of this was pretty accurate and careful in their analysis. But here's the thing as well. I mean, the interesting thing is, unlike the sort of DACA rumors or the rumors that he was a member of Antifa, this one actually had some evidence. Some guy claimed, who was a member of this white nationalist group, that Cruz trained with them. I mean, whether that claim is accurate or not is a completely different story, but at least there was some evidence, right?
Yeah.
And it also comes out that Cruz was involved in a bunch of chat groups in which he promoted a lot of white nationalist views. Was very racist against Jews and Islamic people. Very, very racist against black people as well. And was a huge Trump supporter. There's images of him wearing a Make America Great Again hat, among other things. So even though he might not have trained with this white nationalist group, it's still clear that he fits that kind of profile better than the far left Mexican immigrant profile. And the worrying thing here is it's not even that he necessarily did this because of his white nationalism and racist beliefs. It could have been wholly unrelated to that. He was expelled from the school, his mother recently passed away, and other things. But it's still good to know, in the sense that there is a problem in America with white nationalism that promotes racist views and does so to people who are in positions where they want community and are disaffected, and there's a love of guns and other things. And this culture is problematic, and we should probably be aware of that. Now, the other thing I wanted to talk about that also has to do with the mental illness factor. A lot of people say want to blame this shooting on the person's mental illness, and it's clear that this individual did have a history of mental illness. And so I want to flag that most people who have mental illnesses do not engage in mass shootings. Mass shootings are by definition very rare, and so it's not the case that most people that have mental illnesses will do this. Although there's a counter narrative as well, saying that most shooters don't have mental illness, and I find that a bit complicated as well, in the sense that, well, for one, you should never blame anyone or shame someone for having a mental illness. So I'm not saying this in order to say that we should shame mental illness, but part of the problem here is that when a shooting occurs, often mental illness, almost by definition, has to be involved. And that is because it takes something abnormal, in a sense, for someone to have the courage to walk into a school without empathy and shoot a bunch of innocent people.
Yeah.
And that might not be something that an individual would have a history of illness, right? In the sense that, it's clear with this incident, the man had gone through various, had seen mental health help, I think, over the years. But even if they didn't, there would still be something that you could say about this killer where mental illness probably played a factor if you could have the ability to not have the empathy to go in there and shoot all these people. And I think that's important to note. I don't think we should ignore the mental illness factor. I think America needs way better mental health help and facilities, especially science-based ones. But of mm-hmm. course, first and foremost, what they need is better gun regulations, of course. So I know the narrative through the Republicans and the Trump administration is to blame this all on mental illness. No, we should focus on the guns first, but of course, mental illness is important and we need help wherever it's available. So that's what I got to say about that. The only other thing I want to talk about that I thought was actually kind of interesting for me was that there was one video I saw where a young woman was reporting that she had talked to Cruz after the shooting had taken place, and her claim was there must be a second shooter, right? And this was a teenager who was in a student at that school. And so the thing that occurred to me as I was watching this clip was, this clip is going to be used by conspiracy theorists, right?
Of course.
And the thing that runs through your head is just that, did this young woman make it up? Was she fantasy prone? Like, did she think that it happened, but really she's confusing herself and it was someone else she was talking to? And she remembers the situation because she said that she turned to him and said, jokingly, that if anyone was going to shoot up the school, I thought it would be you. And she said he did a double take, and then they both left the building. And that's why she said she thought that there would be a second shooter. Now, that sounds, in some sense, like, bizarre, weird, why would she make this up, right? All this fun stuff. And so I was like, this could totally be used by conspiracy theorists to argue that it was a false flag or there was something else going on, right?
Yeah.
However, it has since come out, and this is interesting as well, that he did end up, after he had done the shooting, he ditched all of his weapons and guns and stuff, masks, and left them in the stairway and actually evacuated the building with other students. So it is likely that she actually did talk to him after he had done the shooting. And that's how he escaped on foot before they eventually caught him.
Right.
But it was interesting when I first watched that video, because I was like, this is how like conspiracy theories are made, right? In the chaos of the event, some random person who either thought or might have thought, and in this case, she might actually have talked to him. The chaos is what creates the sort of narratives that can then be strung together as connecting the dots for the conspiracy, right? So an example of this, the most famous one, is during September 11th, I think a journalist on air had mentioned that Building 7 had fell before it actually fell. And everyone uses that as an example of like, well, clearly, like, this is evidence of the conspiracy, right? But the funny thing there is that it was a mistake. It happened to be a prescient mistake in that what she said actually did happen. And everyone ignores the mistakes that people made that didn't come true, right? But then it's like, why would they have fed her the information before it actually happened when it was actually going to happen? Like,
yeah, like that's a risk of exposure to your conspiracy.
That doesn't even make any sense, because why not just feed them the information, wait till the building falls, and then they'll just report on it as it happens. Like, you don't.
Yeah. In reality, she's just, I don't know, maybe cut out for being a psychic.
Yeah, yeah.
you know, spouted something that she had no idea about, and then it happened. Oh my God.
Yeah. And, but very, very last thing to say about this, and I want to say this just because, people posted this to Facebook that I can't yell at them on Facebook for because I'm related to them in some way. So I wanted to spout them on the show. I've been seeing a lot of memes being posted about how, so the one was, it was a t-shirt and it said on the t-shirt, "Dear God, why is there violence in schools?" And then it was a reply from God saying, "Because you took God out of schools. Signed, God." And I just want to say that there's several things that are really stupid about this. And the first is that people can pray in school. Like, the fact that they removed mandated prayers from school in the United States does not mean God is no longer in schools. Anyone who's religious can pray it up whenever they want or wear whatever religious symbols they want to at school. That's up to them. Also, what kind of God is prevented from entering a brick wall building because they no longer pray inside of it?
Like, if he's omnipotent, then it doesn't matter if you want him in schools or not. He's going to be wherever the hell he wants.
Right. I mean, because the flip side of that is, your God is a petty little bitch. Like, yeah, if he's going, "Well, it's... you didn't pray for me inside that building, so I'm going to let 17 people die." What a fucking dick.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't even get that, like, that the people who post this shit are not even aware of how stupid that makes their God look by posting this.
Yeah. And pathetic.
Yeah.
And certainly not omnipotent or omnipresent or benign. Maybe one or two of the three, but certainly not all three.
And also, why would the most religious country, most in the developing world, the most religious country in the developing world, is having these problems, yet atheist Scandinavia is doing A-okay in terms of school shootings? Yeah. what lesson is God teaching there? It, like,
yeah,
frustrating. Anyways, we can now move from this to the happy news of debilitating influenza.
Yay!
So, we're going to talk about the flu. The reason why we are doing this is because this year has been a particularly tough year for influenza. And so we want to do some health advocacy and encourage people to get vaccinated in the future if you haven't gotten vaccinated already for the flu. This year, there was a case just in Guelph. I think three children have died around the corner from where I live. One of the children was as old as 12 years old, which is really sad. And this is because the strain this year is particularly aggressive compared to other strains of the flu that occur in previous seasons. It's a really, really, really bad flu season. It's also, relation to the last thing that we were talking about, the shooting in Florida, the mother of the shooter passed away November 1st from complications due to the flu. She was 68 years old. So the flu is deadly. It kills people and possibly has an impact on history in that sense. And so the common conception is that the flu is just some sort of mild illness, but it clearly kills people. And even if you don't die from the flu, you're liable to pass it on to other people. So the public understanding of the vaccine is important, and it's probably not as good as it should be. And this is in part because people take the vaccine every year, and it's not always highly effective. So the variation in its effectiveness, I think, can confuse a lot of people to how the vaccine actually works, and therefore prevent them from actually getting the shot. So to help encourage vaccination, I plan to go through a lot of the misconceptions about the flu itself, some misconceptions about the vaccine for flu in particular, and end with some positive reasons for why you should get off your ass and get the flu shot, even in the years where it's less effective, right? I mean, so you might think, oh, I should only get it when it's really highly effective, but you should always get it even when it's not effective or not as effective. It's always effective, but it's never... it's never 100% and it's never 0%.
Yeah, so it's always worth getting.
Yes. So, for starters, and I wanted to make this point very clear because it's my own pet peeve, is that people need to stop saying they had the flu. You may have had the flu, but you need to stop saying it. And this is why most people who claim to have had the flu never got tested. You were sick, you had a runny nose and a fever, you stayed in bed for a few days, and then you told everyone you had the flu. And maybe you did, but you never got tested, and you could have had just a rough cold. And this is important because the conflation with having a cold with the flu minimizes the extent to which the flu is seen as a debilitating and deadly disease. We've all had a rough cold and lived through it. Some people, including people I know, avoid the flu shot or shrug it off because they had the flu and think it was no big deal. But then I ask them, did you get tested? And they usually say no. And I ask, then how do you know it was the flu? And of course, they have no clue whether it was the flu or not. But now they're not getting vaccinated and they could possibly become carriers for the flu during the flu season. And by doing this, they're risking their own health and the health of people they loved. So by stop calling every time you get sick the flu, hopefully it'll minimize this occurrence, right?
Yeah. Well, I get, I usually get, well, it's less nowadays, but I'll still usually get two colds a year on average. I used to get like four or five. And they're very severe. From what I have been able to figure out with my ENT specialist and my doctor, it's because I have a lot of inflammation in my ear, nose, throat area from my immune system kind of going a little bit crazy. Fine. So we think that's why colds hit me so hard. But they hit me hard, and sometimes it feels like the flu, but I know it's not the flu, and I don't tell people it's the flu.
Well, I mean, that... You know, yeah. I get a... I mean, that's the thing, is like... The cold and the flu have very similar symptoms, right?
Especially if your cold is really bad. It can feel like a flu. Like, I get, like, fever symptoms, you know, chest congestion, chest cough, sore throat, runny nose. Sometimes I'll get, like, soreness in my body. Like, it can hit me really hard, and it can feel like a flu.
Right.
But it's not.
And the thing is, most of us will lay in bed and feel shitty for a few days, but it never gets to the point where you get hospitalized, and it never gets to the point where you're so worried that you're going to die. That, right? I mean, most of us, you know, we lay in bed, we tough it out, and then we're fine in a week, and it's all good. And you may have had the flu. Like, you never know. I mean, but the thing is, no one is going to the doctors and getting like a swab to determine that it is in fact the flu that you have, right?
Yeah.
And so people have this false sense that, oh, I had the flu, where it's like, well, no, you could have just had a really terrible cold. You could be Mark over here and have some weird immune thing going on and the colds really hit you hard, right? But it's important to know that the flu shot isn't there to protect you from the cold. It's supposed to protect you from flus, which are often deadly, surprisingly enough. So now that we know that your mild cold was not the flu, you might be wondering why you should get the vaccine if it isn't always effective, right? So part of the problem is that there are more than one strain of influenza virus. So there's type A and B and C. However, within each type, there are many different strains, right? And since the flu virus, the reason why they have many different strains is that the flu virus actually evolves rapidly. It's a very fast evolver in that sense, right? And this puts health officials in a tough spot, right? Because they're trying to predict which type of flu virus is going to become the most prevalent in each flu season. And then they also need to prepare for the rapidity of the evolution of that virus. So given this, you may think that planning what flu shot would be most effective is almost impossible. And yet, through the magic, not magic, of science, they are getting really good at figuring this out, right? It's a matter of determining, given certain conditions, what's the likelihood of this happening, and preparing ahead, right? And of course, this is never perfect, right? And because it isn't perfect, some people decide to shrug it off and not get vaccinated at all, claiming that scientists don't actually know what they're doing. I mean, they make this claim about the weatherman all the time as well, meteorologists. And yet, weather predictions are actually pretty accurate. But everyone remembers the day when it said it's going to get like 8 feet of snow, and then it never snows at all. And then they go, rah, weather people, they don't know anything.
That drives me nuts living in Alberta and Calgary in particular, because the mountains with Vancouver on the other side cause really kind of crazy weather sometimes. But, like, it's not really unpredictable, but sometimes weird things happen, and you just constantly hear, like, oh, that weatherman, if you want the weather to change, wait 5 minutes.
Yeah. No, I mean, we get a similar thing here with the lake effect snow, because the wind conditions and how much snow actually gets accumulated through the lake effect is really difficult to predict, right? I mean, it's amazing how accurate they are considering that fact, right? Mm-hmm. But there are days where all of a sudden we're getting dumped on way more than they predicted, right? But, like, whatever. I mean, it's not a perfect science, but at least it's some... I mean, it's better than the old, like, farmer's almanac where you're just, like, guessing based on, like, cow entrails or... I don't think that's what they actually do in the Farmer's Almanac, but it's pretty much the equivalent of reading cow entrails, I guess.
It's about as accurate.
So this year, sadly, the flu vaccine is only 36% effective, right? Which seems really, really low, and it is really low. But that is better than no coverage at all, right? 36% better than zero. It's also important to know that the flu vaccines not only protect against getting the virus, but also minimize the impact of the symptoms for those who are infected by a strain not covered by the vaccine, right? So in other words, even if the vaccine does not protect you from getting sick from the flu, it will minimize the symptoms you suffer if you actually get infected.
Yeah.
So there you go. You should just get vaccinated regardless of the effectiveness. Right?
Yeah, because you're at least building up antibodies, and you're going to give your body a better chance to adapt if you do get sick. Right.
Well, I mean, if it's a matter of staying in bed for a week or for 3 days, I mean, I would rather stay in bed for 3 days.
Yeah.
Right. So the problem is that people who get the flu shot and end up getting sick are likely not to get vaccinated again because they think, well, what's the point? I got the shot and I still got sick. Well, if they actually did get the flu and not just a cold, as we just were talking about, then they probably suffered less than had they not gotten vaccinated at all. But of course, that is something most people don't think about. So the last point, this last point also plays a role in the most common of the vaccine myths, which is that the flu vaccine causes you to have the flu. There are many reasons you might get sick after getting the flu shot. The first would be that you were actually infected with the flu before you got the shot. You just weren't exhibiting any symptoms. The other is that you could have been infected by a strain that actually wasn't covered by the vaccine that you got. And it also could be that you don't have the flu, right? So again, you mistakenly thought you had the cold, or you had the flu, but it was really the cold.
Well, there's another factor to that as well, because a lot of people think that, oh, I have a runny nose, I got the flu from the flu shot, and but those are not symptoms of the flu. Like, that is, there's a difference between flu symptoms and your body's immune response functioning.
Right.
Runny nose, sneezing, coughing, that's your body's immune system trying to purge the virus. the way that these work is they inject you with a dead version of the virus to get your body's immune system responding and building up antibodies. So naturally, you could exhibit signs of your immune system responding.
Right. I mean, that's the thing, is these, it's impossible to actually get the flu from the vaccines because the vaccines are created with an inoculation vaccine, is that equated with inoculation? I don't know. Either way, when you get the needle version of the flu vaccine, it contains an inactivated virus. So there's no possible way that the thing can infect you.
Yeah.
But also the nasal spray, it actually has a attenuated virus. So it's an active virus, but it's severely weakened. And it also can't possibly infect you. I think the only thing that it could possibly do, if you end up shedding the virus through, say, a runny nose, it's possible that you can spread that attenuated virus to other people, but you can't actually infect yourself with it. But I think the studies show that even the possibility of that happening is really, 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 really rare, but it's a possibility. But if that's the case, just get the needle vaccine. If you don't mind risking the autism. And I'm kidding, of course. But, I mean, what goes along with what you're saying, too, with the runny nose and the sniffling is other symptoms like having a fever, too. So I almost get a fever every time I get a flu vaccine. It's not a severe fever. It's just I feel really hot and have a bit of a headache. And I would rather have that for a couple hours after getting a flu shot than possibly get the flu and die, frankly.
Yeah.
So even if you get these more moderate or mild side effects from the vaccine itself, they're still worth the risk of actually getting the disease. So aside from that most common myth, there are more typical run-of-the-mill anti-vaccine concerns. So no, the aluminum in the vaccine is not going to give you Alzheimer's, and no, the mercury in the vaccine will not cause autism. I think we've covered a lot of this before. But yeah. the mercury that was in vaccines is a mercury that is ethyl, not methyl mercury, and therefore doesn't have the same effects as the bad mercury. But also, most vaccines, including flu shot vaccines, do not contain mercury. There are some, actually, I think all vaccines don't contain mercury, but some of the ones that do are flu shot ones, but I don't even think that that's common anymore. But even if your flu shot has mercury in it, it's not bad for you, and don't worry about it.
Yeah. It's also less mercury than you would get in a serving of tuna, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
So, and it's a different type of mercury that's not dangerous than what's in tuna.
Yeah. And the
purpose, if you're eating tuna, yeah, shut up.
Yeah, and the purpose of having the mercury is, I believe it's an agent that's supposed to prevent contamination of when the needle punctures the lid on top of the, I guess, the vaccine mixture.
Right.
The mercury in there is supposed to prevent the breaking of that barrier contaminating the stuff inside the vaccine, which could cause other issues, right? So it's there for a reason. It's not like they were like, hey, let's just put mercury in this because, hey.
Yeah, it's mind control drugs.
Yeah. Yeah. And I can't remember off the top of my head what the aluminum is, but it also serves a purpose. I think a similar purpose to that. The other thing is, there's a lot of myths about getting the flu shot when pregnant. But contrary to all these myths, when you're pregnant, get the flu shot. My wife got the flu shot both times when she has been pregnant, including this year. So get the flu shot when pregnant. It's not going to harm you or your baby. In fact, getting the flu while being pregnant is not good for you or your baby. So get the flu
shot. Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Who would have thought a very, very deadly disease?
Yeah, something,
and we'll get to, yeah.
Something that kills like 80,000 people or maybe even more, a year, is bad to have when you're pregnant.
Yeah. Huh. So, the last sort of, like, more conspiracy type concerns is that flu vaccines are a profitable enterprise that make yeah. pharmaceutical companies billions of dollars. Now, it's true that in some cases, the vaccine itself, the company is making somewhat of a profit off of them. I mean, they're going through the effort of manufacturing them, so they probably want to pay their employees and other things. But this doesn't make sense of the fact that treating people with flu actually makes companies more money. And so the small cost of producing a vaccine, if your motivation was profit, would actually lower your profit in the long run.
Yeah.
Right? And in our public health system in Canada, people who get the flu tend to put a strain on our healthcare system. So by not vaccinating, it's costing you, the taxpayer, a lot of money. Not the pharmaceutical company, right?
Yeah.
The pharmaceutical company is like, yay, people are sick and now they get to use our drugs. And they're paying for more expensive treatments like ventilators and other life-saving devices yeah. and not this tiny little vaccine that we gave you. So yes, this notion that it's some sort of like money scheme is also really stupid. Now, another common anti-vaccine myth is that getting the shots reduces your natural immunity. The idea being you need to be infected and get sick to get the immunity as opposed to getting an attenuated virus. But this is stupid. I mean, it's stupid when it comes to measles and stuff, and having measles parties is really stupid. But it's like even worse when it comes to the flu, and that's because of how fast the flu virus evolves. So even if you got a natural immunity from getting sick with the flu this season, it's not necessarily going to protect you from a future season.
Yeah.
When you get infected by a different strain of the virus in the future, which is why we need to give you a vaccine every year, right? And along with that myth is the myth that getting the shot puts evolutionary pressure on the virus, making the virus even stronger. This is a myth that was given a very large platform by the sometimes funny but often peddles bullshit on a show, Bill Maher. And there's evidence that due to herd immunity, that this actually lowers the rate of mutations of the virus. So basically, when you create herd immunity, which means that you've lowered the amount of people to actually be getting infected, and you basically put a stop to the virus's ability to spread through a population, then it is less time to procreate and therefore less time to mutate. And so if you limit it to a few hosts, you are actually basically preventing the virus from getting much worse, not making it stronger. So this,
yeah. Well, yeah. I think that's something people just don't understand about the way evolution works. Even in viruses, like a virus has to have a host and a suitable environment in which to reproduce and yeah. also receive this evolutionary pressure. It's like,
well, yeah.
A human's not going to evolve with, like, an individual human is not going to evolve within its lifetime. Neither is a cell for a virus.
Yeah. I mean, but the analogy that they're making that makes them confused is sort of like the superweed analogy. So it's like when you dump, like, a pesticide on a bunch of crops to, like, combat weed production, eventually there might be a strain that the weed killer does not kill, and then they're the ones that sort of like reproduce, and therefore you've created this super weed, right?
Right.
But that's not really what's going on when you vaccinate, right? So you're yeah. not, when you're vaccinating, you're not creating a selection pressure for the virus in that sense, right? You're just preventing the virus from having uptake into your system, right? even if you are putting a selection pressure on the vaccine, it's not or on the virus, which it's possible that there is some selection pressure. It's not clear, though, that it's having the same effect that pesticides do in that sense, right? If it were the case, we would be seeing evidence of that, and we're not. So.
Yeah, I mean, we'd probably all be dead by now because it would have just outpaced us.
Super flu.
Because obviously, like, we're holding it at bay with what we can do right now. Like, right. It's not like we have the ability to destroy the virus. So if it were really evolving that quickly, then we'd be screwed.
Right. But I mean, again, like, the selection pressure is weird. I mean, you would have to say, because in the plant case, right, the selection pressure is that you had a weed with a particular mutation that now the pesticide doesn't work on it anymore. But in this case, you would have to say that what the selection pressure is doing is you've taken away the ability for the virus to get in you because of the flu shot. Now you have to wait for a virus that has a particular mutation to go inside of you, the host, that vaccine was supposed to protect. But then because of how fast the virus mutates, you have a different vaccine next year anyways. So it's not like we're using the same vaccine over and over again and creating the same pressure, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
We're changing
things as fast as they are, as fast as the virus can.
Right. So it's not the same. It's not like we're using the same pesticide over and over again, right?
Yeah.
And we're also closing off the hosts, which is their breeding ground, which is like, we're not doing that with weeds necessarily.
They're still in the dirt.
Yeah. So the analogy is just not a good one. And so to conclude the sort of like reasons that people use for not getting the vaccine, this is my all-time favorite excuse. And yes, I know people who have said this to me, and that is, well, I never get the flu, so why would I get the flu shot?
Yeah.
And well, unless these people are clairvoyant, this is just plain old-fashioned stupidity. Just because you haven't gotten sick in the past doesn't mean you won't get sick in the future. And also, the flu doesn't necessarily have severe symptoms, so you might have had the flu, and you just might not have known that you had the flu, and then you just exposed all your loved ones, including children and grandparents, to a virus that could possibly kill them. So hooray! Yeah. some more reason for just why getting the flu shot is important. So the CDC is indicating that this year's flu season is going to outstrip the last record-breaking season back in 2009 and 2010 that killed 12,000 people and hospitalized close to 300,000 people, and this is American numbers. Last week it was reported that one of every 10 deaths in America were due to flu-related illnesses, and that accounts for around 4,000 deaths. And this number is expected to grow in the coming weeks. Even though this season is particularly bad, flu deaths have dramatically decreased since the introduction of vaccinations. Since flu vaccinations were developed in the 1940s, flu deaths have dropped in America from around 40 to 50 deaths per 100,000 to around 15 deaths per 100,000. So combine that decrease with the moderating effect of the severity of flu-like symptoms because of the vaccine, and this means that flu vaccines are a major public health success, and you should get the vaccine. You should wash your hands. You should probably not put your hands in your mouth or in other people's mouth. Don't lick people. And also go outside. That's surprisingly enough, so many people like might not know this, but the reason why the winter months you tend to get more sick is not because of the weather outside being cold and that somehow is what's creating the sickness, but it's that everyone stays inside because it's too cold outside. And when you stay inside, you're in closer proximity to these other flesh-like creatures we like spending time with. And because of that, you're more likely to get infected by them. So the more you go outside and have fun, the actually you're exposing yourself to less viruses. So go outside, have fun. Run around in the snow. It's fun.
It's not, but do it anyway.
And don't lick people. I mean, come on, guys.
That's my biggest problem, is I'm like a dog. Every time somebody says hi to me, I try to lick their face.
Yeah, but more importantly, get vaccinated.
Yeah.
The flu shot is very important. And let's not have people needlessly die.
Indeed.
Yay!
This is my first winter, I think, ever, where I haven't been surrounded by tons of people all day, every day. And it's like I feel just like a little bit safer. Yeah. So I'm kind of excited.
My wife recently at work, I guess somebody showed up stupidly when they were really ill. And of course my wife's pregnant, and she was like, "Why are you, go home? Like, if you're sick, go home." And the person refused. So my wife actually went downstairs to like a medical clinic in the building and got a face mask. And her boss was like, "Isn't that a bit extreme?" And my wife was like, "Nope."
Yeah.
So her motherly instincts are kicking in there, I guess.
Yeah. There's a tiny baby in there.
Yeah.
And a tiny baby can't wear a mask, so.
And we don't know what this person has. I mean, like, she's been vaccinated, but it could be a strain that wasn't protected and all that other stuff, so. That's the other thing. If you're if you are actually sick, and I realize this is difficult for people who need the money and don't have sick days, so this might be a bigger problem in America than in Canada, because we actually have good policies in place that protect people for taking sick leave. But if you're sick, stay home.
Yeah.
Don't risk infecting other people like an asshole. So, yeah. Go get vaccinated. Long story short, go get vaccinated.
Yeah, do it.
All right, so finally we have the monthly dose of stupid. And we have selected our candidate of stupidity this month. And that's Sir Jordan B. Peterson. Or Jeep. GB? Jibep. Whatever.
Jibep.
So he did an interview recently with Vice News and said something really stupid.
Is there sexual harassment in the workplace? Yes. Should it stop? That'd be good. Will it? Well, not at the moment it won't, because we don't know what the rules are.
Do you think men and women can work in the workplace together?
I don't know.
Without sexual harassment?
We'll see.
We'll see. How many years will it take for men and women working in the workplace together?
More than 40.
To get a sense.
We don't know what the rules are. Like, what? Here's a rule. No makeup in the workplace?
Why would that be a rule?
Why should you wear makeup in the workplace? Isn't that sexually provocative?
No.
It's not?
No.
Well, what is it then? What's the purpose of makeup?
Some people would like to just put on makeup.
Why?
I don't know why.
Why do you make your lips red? Because they turn red during sexual arousal. That's why. Why do you put rouge on your cheeks? Same reason.
I mean, look.
How about high heels?
What about high heels?
What about them? They're there to exaggerate sexual attractiveness. That's what high heels do. Now, I'm not saying that people shouldn't use sexual displays in the workplace. I'm not saying that. But I am saying that that is what they're doing. And that is what they're doing.
Do you feel like a serious woman who does not want sexual harassment in the workplace, do you feel like if she wears makeup in the workplace that she is somewhat being critical?
Yeah.
Okay.
I do think that.
Basically, the context of it was he asked the interviewer whether or not men and women can work together, and then proceeded to just say ridiculous thing after ridiculous thing about men and women working together. And we're going to highlight each of those points as we go along. So the first thing is he said that men and women have only been working together for roughly 40 years. And that's just silly.
I wonder if he knows what year it is.
Yeah, 40 years from now would be 1978, is it? Did I do the math right?
Yep. Yep. 78.
Yeah. And I don't know. I saw Mad Men or a few episodes, and I'm pretty sure that's prior to 78.
Yeah.
But even that, I mean, like, okay, there was like patriarchal structures for a while, but I do not think it's I'm pretty sure there's been cases throughout history where women have worked with men, including inside of the household in patriarchal structures, and so on. So that's just silly.
Yeah.
But then he also made the comment that things are deteriorating pretty rapidly at the moment in terms of the relationships between men and women. And I have to say that I don't know what he's talking about.
I feel like he's confused by the Me Too movement.
Maybe.
That's what I kind of took away from it. I mean, obviously, I don't know for sure because what he said made no sense. But I had to wonder if it's like with all this stuff in the news about, you know, sexual harassment and women coming forward and everything. If maybe he thinks that's a sign of relationships deteriorating, but that's a sign of progress. So right. I hope that's not what he's alluding to.
Right. I mean, like, that's the thing. Is he must be implying that what's happening with the Me Too movement is that, I mean, he does say that we don't know what the rules are. I'm assuming men don't know how to properly engage with women in a workplace. And so maybe what he's trying to suggest is that the reason why things are deteriorating is that these sexual harassment claims are actually due to the fact that some men don't know what the rules are in the workplace. And I'm assuming what he means there is not explicit rules like a company policy, because clearly there someone can just read what the policy is. But maybe he's implying that there's like, sort of like cultural rules of how to navigate the situation. And so people
social etiquette and that sort of thing.
But even then, I'm pretty sure if you're a human being, you know what the rules are.
Yeah. It's not that people don't know what the rules are. It's that certain people don't care what the rules are. And
or even if you don't know what the rules are, you probably should know what the rules are. Like if you think groping a woman is okay, that's probably on you in some way.
Yes, definitely.
Like, what sheltered life did you live such that it never occurred to you that maybe groping someone is inappropriate?
Yeah. And, like, I kind of got the feeling that he was maybe not justifying all of this on the fact that we don't know, but maybe, like, trying to make an excuse almost. Like, we can't work in the workplace because we don't know the rules. That's it. Like, whereas it should be, there are people who won't follow the rules and we need to do something about it.
Right.
And that's what the message should have been. But his message was to be like, who cares? Give up. We don't know what to do.
Well,
we can't work together.
I didn't see it as give up. I saw it more as him trying to struggle. Well, how do we solve this problem? But then he goes on a tangent about makeup and high heels.
Oh yeah, that was good.
and so I guess like his solution is that one way of decreasing sexual harassment at work is to remove sexual signifiers. And for him, sexual signifiers are things like women wearing makeup because they sort of accentuate evolutionary sexual features, or wearing high heels because they sort of, I guess, make your buttocks stick out and this is to attract males or something like that. Now, there's two silly things going on here, which is that not all the things you do fashion-wise or makeup-wise are in the same sense evolutionarily sexually attractive. Like, for example, he mentioned red lipstick, but I don't see often people wearing red lipstick. I mean, I've seen all kinds of colors of lipstick, and I still think women are sexy who wear that kind of makeup. So,
yeah. I mean, I love red lipstick, but he says women wear red lipstick because your lips get red during sexual arousal. And I mean, okay, you're going to have like increased blood flow, your heart rate increases and that kind of thing. But if someone's lips were bright, glossy red when they were sexually aroused, I'd be concerned and probably turned off. Yeah. I'm just throwing out that if my girlfriend's
there's
lips
something
did
wrong
that,
with your lips.
Yeah, I'd be like, whoa, we have to go to a doctor. Put your clothes on. We need to leave right now.
Yeah. I mean, but the other thing is, like, because he was saying that, like, almost like, why else are they wearing that makeup and stuff? And, like, the interviewer is kind of, like, baffled by this. It's like, well, like, of course they just want to do it because they like doing it, right?
Yeah, why do men wear suits?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, most of it is, like, they're not thinking, hey, I'm going to, like, attract a mate. It's often just, like, cultural standards, right? In some sense, these are the unexplicit rules that he's talking about, right? That we know the rules. I can't just show up to work in a torn shirt with my skin showing in that sense, because I would be looked at and considered weird and it's inappropriate and so on, right?
Yeah.
These are the sort of like cultural maneuvers you're making. Similarly, I think women are pressured, or not necessarily pressured, but maybe there's some aspect of pressure to dress a certain way because of certain cultural standards, not because of any like thinking of like, I'm going to attract the man, therefore I'm wearing this red lipstick.
Well, and there is some social expectation for women to dress a certain way in the workplace, but it's not, women didn't create it so they could attract mates. Men created it more than 40 years ago, I might add, Mr. Peterson. Men created this expectation because of the very problems we're talking about.
Yeah.
Like, women were often, and probably still today are, in far too many places, but they were expected to wear makeup, expected to wear skirts and heels to look pretty.
But even if you actually wanted to put on a sexual display to attract somebody at work, that doesn't invite other people who you're not trying to attract to sexually assault you.
Yes, exactly.
Right? I mean, like, this is the thing. I mean, I'm not going to go as far to accuse Jordan Peterson of victim blaming, because it's not clear to me that he said the things in the precise way such that he's blaming women for their own sexual harassment. But it comes pretty close to saying that, because it's like you're saying, oh, well, if you didn't wear the makeup, you wouldn't be getting sexually assaulted. Therefore, it's almost on you in a way. Right.
Yeah. And if
well, and then he did say at the very end of that, of the clip that we're referring to, that when he was asked that if a woman doesn't want sexual harassment but wears makeup, are they being hypocritical? And he says yes. Right.
And that is seriously fucked up.
Seriously fucked up. I mean, that's the closest statement of being victim blaming. Even though, like, I mean, I engage with people online who are nitpicky and blah, 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 blah. And they're going to go, well, he's not really blaming the victim, because he's just saying that if you know that it's going to increase your sexual harassment and then you get sexually harassed and you do it anyways, well, then you're being hypocritical. But the point is, like, even if you know that it increases your risk of being sexually harassed, it really isn't on you. It's on the people who are doing the sexually harassing activity, and they're the problem. And we should be encouraging not women to dress in ways that they... We shouldn't be encouraging women to dress a certain way. We should be encouraging people not to molest people.
Exactly. We're not feral cats. These aren't women who are just in the street with their asses in the air screaming, waiting for any male to just come along. Like, we're slightly more evolved than that, and so should be our social etiquette.
I like the idea that we're all just feral cats.
I mean, it'd be kind of funny to see people out in the street just, hey! Hey!
Oh my god.
But seriously, like, this is not the fault of women. And I mean, if you look back to the earliest days of the use of makeup, it was a sign of power in ancient Egypt. Only people with power and affluence wore makeup. They didn't do it to find mates, because they had already evolved the ability to talk to people. They did it as a sign of power. Same thing with jewelry and nice clothes. That's why men wear suits and gold watches and why women wear nice jewelry and nice clothes. It's, you want to feel like, you just want to feel good about yourself.
Yeah. I think it could be all of the above, right? It could be power. It could be about feeling good about yourself. And it could be to try to attract a mate. I mean, all these things apply, and it still makes what he says really stupid.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Because, yeah, there's nothing wrong with making yourself look good for other people.
Yeah.
There's something wrong with other people taking advantage of that and then using it as an excuse.
And again, I mean, like, he really likes, this is just a fact about Peterson if you don't know him all that well. So I guess we didn't even highlight who he is. So he's a University of Toronto psychology professor. Although if you've been following our show, we covered him during the Lindsay Shepherd fiasco. but he has this propensity towards these kind of like evolutionary stories, right? But it's like, makeup can be sexy regardless of it like accentuating evolutionary features, right? So it's not like, again, like I find certain styles of makeup attractive that clearly have nothing to do with evolution.
Yeah, like I really like eyeliner and eyeshadow, and if my girlfriend's eyes started to like kind of go dark black during sexual arousal, again, off to the doctor right away. That's not an evolutionary response.
Every time I orgasm, my eyes go black. Yeah. No, it's just ridiculous all around.
Yeah. So the way I look at makeup and stuff like that is just like decorating the inside of your house. But you're decorating your body. Yeah. Like, it's just, it's you want to make a space your own. You want to look the way you want to look.
Right.
You've got your reasons. You've got your personal taste. That's it.
Yep. Yep. But I don't know what the rules are, man. Just tell me what the rules are.
Don't grab women that don't want it. And I mean, you're married, so...
Too many rules, bro. Yeah. Oh, I can't. Oh, too many rules. Now you're going to, like, make laws, and you're going to create a gulag system, and oh, my God. Next, you're going to tell me that I can't flirt with my TAs.
I mean, I don't know the actual rules there, but I'd say it's probably not a good idea. I mean, I don't know what the rules of the school are, but socially, I wouldn't recommend it.
No, no. Anyways, Jordan Peterson. Stupid. You're kind of stupid. Yeah.
Oh, I can't wait for the hate mail comments.
Oh, are we going to get another page of the Orwell?
Probably. Probably. We'll see. I mean, eventually, if we keep going,
where's the chapter in 1984 where they yell at women for wearing makeup?
Well, that is all for this show. Thank you for listening to the Being Skeptical podcast. If you like the show, please tell your friends, write us a review on iTunes or Google Play Music, or send us an email telling us what you think. You can write us at beingskepticalpod@gmail.com or leave a comment on the post. You can also follow us on Facebook or Twitter. Thanks again for tuning in, and please join us again in a few weeks. And remember, be skeptical.
And get vaccinated.
And don't
grope always women. And what?
And don't grope women. Don't grope people. Yeah.
Get vaccinated and don't grope women and don't shoot up schools. Three life lessons we learned on this podcast.
Yeah. Bye.
And see.